And on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Washington area sniper John Allen Muhammad was convicted of six more murders Tuesday at a trial in which he acted as his own attorney and the prosecution's star witness was his young protege and partner in crime. Muhammad, 45, is already under a death sentence in Virginia for a killing there. The most he can get for the six Maryland slayings is life in prison without parole. The jury took slightly more than 4 hours to convict Muhammad after a four-week trial. The FBI is wrapping up its two-week search of a suburban Detroit horse farm after finding no trace of former Teamsters boss Jimmy Hoffa's remains, a local prosecutor said Tuesday. Oakland County Prosecutor David Gorka told the Associated Press he was informed by Bloomfield Township Police that the search was ending without any remains found at the Hidden Dreams Farm in Milford Township, Michigan. Iraq will investigate allegations that U.S. Marines carried out a massacre of civilians in Haditha in November, the country's prime minister has said. Nouri Maliki told Reuters news agency that there was a limit to the acceptable excuses for civilian casualties. The Pentagon is close to ending its own inquiries into the deaths, initially attributed to a clash with militants. Observers say the incident could deal a more serious blow to U.S. standing than the Abu Ghraib scandal. George Bush first learned of reports that U.S. Marines killed two dozen unarmed Iraqi civilians only after reporters began asking questions, the White House said Tuesday. In other Iraq news, car bombs targeting Shiite areas tore through a car dealership in southern Iraq and a bustling outdoor market north of Baghdad Tuesday as attacks nationwide killed 54 people and wounded 120 more in the bloodiest day in recent weeks. Iraqi officials also said a key terror suspect who allegedly confessed to hundreds of beheadings was captured in a raid that also netted documents, cell phones, and computers that contained information on other wanted terrorists and Islamic extremist groups. The Supreme Court today scaled back protections for government workers who blow the whistle on official misconduct, a 5-4 decision in which new Justice Samuel Alito cast the deciding vote. In a victory for the Bush administration, justices said that 20 million public employees do not have free speech protections for what they say as part of their jobs. Critics predicted the impact would be sweeping, from silencing police officers who fear retribution for reporting department corruption to subduing federal employees who want to reveal problems with government hurricane preparedness or terrorist-related security. Supporters said that it will protect governments from lawsuits filed by disgruntled workers pretending to be legitimate whistleblowers. You're listening to News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Hey, this is Michelle Branch, and I'm part of a program called Empower. Mental health problems are real, common, and treatable. To learn more, visit empoweryouth.org. That's the letter M, poweryouth.org.
The European Union acted illegally when it agreed to transfer airline passenger data to the United States as part of U.S. efforts to fight terrorism, the bloc's highest court said on Tuesday. The United States, the Executive European Commission, and European Airlines said the ruling would have no immediate impact on transatlantic air travel and left time to find an agreed solution to the data transfer issue. Under a May 2004 EU-US agreement, European airlines have been obliged to give U.S. authorities 34 items of information on passengers flying to the United States, including name, address, and all forms of payment and contact telephone numbers. The United States insisted the transfer of personal details was essential to fight terrorism following the September 11 attacks on New York and Washington by suicide plane hijackers. But the European Parliament challenged the deal, contending it had no legal basis and infringed fundamental rights. George Bush on Tuesday named Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson to be the next Treasury Secretary, succeeding Jon Snow. Bush made the announcement at a brief White House ceremony flanked by Paulson and Snow, whose resignation had been widely expected. In his remarks, Bush said the Treasury Secretary would be the leading force on his economic team, as well as the chief spokesman for his economic policies, and he praised Paulson's experience and integrity. Federal authorities are actively investigating dozens of American television stations for broadcasting items produced by the Bush administration and major corporations and then passing them off as normal news. Some of the fake news segments talked of success in the war on Iraq or promoted the company's products. Investigators from the Federal Communications Commission are seeking information about stations across the country after a report produced by a campaign group detailed the extraordinary extent of such items. The report by the nonprofit group Center for Media and Democracy found that over a 10-month period, at least 77 television stations were making use of the faux news broadcasts known as video news releases. Not one told viewers who had produced the items.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy. This is Head On. I am, in fact, Bob Kincaid. I was Bob Kincaid yesterday, too. I was Bob Kincaid in a reruns. But what an exciting day yesterday was. Just getting everything set up to do what we were going to do. And then at the end of the day, what a great load of fun we all had. Me and my good buddies John Fox and Bruce Birch and John Fox. As we got together and did something, did the show together from 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern, and had a blast. Oh, it was fun. Now we had some technical problems. There is no doubt about it. But you know what? I was proud of the effort. I was very proud of the effort. And for those of you joining us for the first or the second time, I say welcome, and I hope you will. I hope you'll share your input with us, however you choose, or you can sit in silence and listen and ponder, and maybe scream at the radio. Some you're welcome. Any way you choose to participate. I mean, me, you know, dear leader comes on the television. I looked at my father today. I said, "Look, I've gone where you are, and I'm not even. You know, I'm just barely half your age. I'm already screaming at the TV. Of course, I've been screaming at the TV for." Well, let's see, December 2000. Yeah, about then. I got to quit screaming at the TV for 8 years of Bill Clinton. Well, no, I didn't, because I was screaming at the freaks like Bob Barr and Newt Gingrich and the weird little sex-obsessed Republican freaks who couldn't stand the success of the Clinton administration. Well, never mind. There's other stuff out there. Not the least of which... You know, dear leader appointed a new Treasury Secretary today, right? This is from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Now, when you say that, you have to talk with your teeth clenched like Thurston Howell III. Paulson, wrong choice for secretary. These weirdo ultra right-wing free market freaks who think that the market can just, you know, regulate itself. It'll just regulate itself. The White House made an unfortunate mistake in nominating Henry M. Paulson, Jr. You know, I hear Paulson, I think of Pat Paulson from Laugh-In. Remember Pat Paulson? Was running for, gonna run, he did, he ran for president. Made an unfortunate mistake in nominating Henry M. Paulson, Jr. to be the next Secretary of the Treasury, according to the Competitive Enterprise Institute. You know why? You know why? They don't like Henry M. Paulson, Jr. because he's also been involved with the Nature Conservancy. Because, you see, the Competitive Enterprise Institute hates all things green and growing. If they can't figure it, you know, if it's growing and they can make a buck off of it, yeah, they're all for it. But if it's just sitting around there growing and not doing anything, well, yeah, pave it, drill it, kill it, burn it, do something with it. It's got to make money. Just laying around. It's like the old gag about that. Okay, I'm going to step up. Look, I got Scott's background, so I can tell this truth. Old Scotsman was looking at his young son who had his new glasses on. And he looked over at his son and he said, "Lad, what are you doing over there?" And the boy said, "Nothing, father." Maybe that was Irish, huh? And he said, "Oh, what are you reading?" "Nothing." "What are you looking at through your new glasses?" "Nothing." "Then put them away. You're wasting them." Yeah, that's the way it is with these freaks like a Competitive Enterprise Institute. Jiminy Christmas. Okay, this is the official statement. The official statement from R.J. Smith, CEI adjunct scholar. Quote, "The Nature Conservancy is one of the most feared environmental groups throughout rural America. While promoting itself as a private conservation group, small landowners, family farmers, ranchers, and tree farmers know it as a strong-arm real estate agent for the federal government. It acquires land at fire sale prices from landowners bankrupted by environmental regulations, and then turns around and sells most of it to the federal government at inflated prices. The last thing America needs is more range and forest land." Did you get that? Okay, I cheated. More range and forest land for the federal government to mismanage and burn down. I mean, you know, this is the Goldman Sachs chairman. Yeah, I remember, you know, the big building? They built a multi-billion dollar building with taxpayer money. In New York City, a lot of little welfare for poor little Goldman Sachs with its waifish cheeks and little button nose pressed up against the frosty window pane, looking inside at the taxpayers having all that fun at their expense. Yeah, that Goldman Sachs. So, you know, I mean, I heard it this morning. Yeah, big deal. So what? Caretaker, you know, lame duck president. But not for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Oh, no, no, no. We don't need it because, you know, that man was president of the Nature Conservancy. Or, and you know, they're real estate agents for the federal government. Let's just take the heading off of this Competitive Enterprise Institute garbage and just replace it with John Birch Society, okay? Damn. Nature Conservancy is a threat to the economy of the United States. Holy cow. God, I love them. Aren't right-wing freaks so much fun? Don't you just love them? Don't you? I mean, and I think a lot of America is coming on board now because you hear these, environmentalism. All the last thing America needs is more open space and free range and farmland. Why can't they be McMansions? Bring me another hummingbird tongue. I loathe these people. I really, really do. Honest to Jesus, I do. So that's where we are, and it's not all of where we are. Oh, no, no, no. There's a whole bunch more. And we'll get to it all right after we take a little break. Me, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Close your eyes for a moment. Now imagine you're away from it all. Beside a crystal clear mountain stream, the cool grass crunches underfoot. Take a deep breath and drink in the sound of water cascading over the stones as birds call out from above. A real paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. And with your help, places like this one can last forever. You see, the Nature Conservancy works locally with communities, businesses, and people like you to preserve the most precious natural places around the world. They protect the animals that live there, the plants that grow there, and even the water. That way, this beautiful place will be beautiful forever. And we'll make sure that closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. That's nature.org.
He's a man who just loves conservatives. Baked, broiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
And don't forget fricasseed. I love them fricasseed too. I don't know which way to go right now. My gut tells me that we should probably talk a little bit more about the continuing to explode in the military and the Bush administration's face Haditha story. Information coming out from veterans who had to clean up that massacre. Briones, I think, is the young man's name, from California. His mother says he's a wreck. He's all PTSD'd out. He had to clean up the dead bodies. One of them was a little girl. I know some of you have kids, you know. And when you hear these stories, you have to... I'm not trying to be rough on you, but you have to look at your kids and say, yeah, a little kid like that. This one particular Marine has to clean up the dead bodies these other Marines had slaughtered intentionally, gratuitously, premeditatedly. Pick a legalism. And a little 7-year-old girl, he picks her up, and her head's kind of draped over, and her brains fall on his leg. And as a consequence, he's a wreck. And he says he will never forget the sight of those dead bodies, from little babies all the way to grown adults. babies. These Marines went nuts and killed, damn it, I hate to say this, babies. And, you know, the right wing, treason to talk about that. And on the left, we're horrified. And as I noted late last night in conversation with Bruce and John, we're horrified about it because I guess it's because we did it up close and personal and there might be a photograph or two. How many unphotographed scenes are there of mud buildings reduced to dust with people inside them? How many photos did we not see of Fallujah, for Christ's sakes? Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, I'm sure you do. How many pictures have we? There are 100,000 plus dead civilians. Half of them are women and children, and they are all the direct result of what we have done. See, I remember when the war was gearing up, and frankly, I was pleasantly involved with a little peace group in West Virginia. And there were candlelight vigils. Oh, please don't start a war. But damn it. It's 2006. We're 3 years into this stinking war and contemplating another one. And I don't know if our side yet has figured out that we are dealing with monsters. We are dealing with killers. We're talking about premeditated murderers in the Bush administration. There were peace vigils all over the country before the Iraq War. And what? Were we under the impression, were we so silly, were we so goofy, that we had the notion that the Bush administration is going, oh, Jesus, they're lighting candles, we can't go to war now. It don't work that way. Yeah, 500,000 people came out and hit the streets. There are thousands in New York, thousands in San Francisco. But you know what? The Bush administration understands that, okay, yeah, all right, the granola eaters and the hacky sack kickers and the cheese sandwich grillers and all, they'll come out and they'll walk in the streets and they'll, you know, ooh, we got a candle. And the next day they go home. I'm disturbed. I am torn up about what's coming out of Haditha, but I was torn up when we were talking about it on this program in November of 2005 when it happened and the cover-up started. I was upset then. I've been upset every day since George started this war against those people in Iraq. And we, you know, let's have a little honesty in language. If you listen to the newscast that I do and that Bruce does and that John does, from time to time we will refer to it as George Bush's war on the people of Iraq. There's a reason, you know, we don't just do things. There's a reason we say it that way. The reason we say it that way is, well, you know, this is our hand-picked government that's in power in Iraq. We are no longer at war with the government of Iraq. Who the hell does that leave? That leaves the people of Iraq. And we are at war with them. Now, I'm getting all stirred up and we're barely a half an hour into the program and I apologize. But that line today about how Corporal Briones picked up the little 7-year-old girl and her head was slumped over and her brains fell on his leg. He's got a right to be a wreck. Because I don't think when he was in Paris Island and somebody was screaming in his ear to yell blood, kill, blood makes the grass grow, I don't think he was contemplating little 7-year-old girls with their brains on his leg. Do you? When he was at Paris Island or wherever the hell, you can call them Hodgies, that's what they are, they're a little less than human, they're Hodgies. I don't think that Corporal Briones ever imagined that Haji would be 7 years old with her brains leaking out. And I don't give a tinker's damn what the right wing said. Oh, this is treason. Screw you, right-wing nut freaks. It is not treason to object to murder being done in the name of my 7-year-old, my 8-year-old, my 10-year-old, my 12-year-old, my 18-year-old. It is not treason to object to that and to call BS on it when it happens. Are you with me? And they're still spinning. The wing nuts are still spinning. And they're calling Jack Murtha treasonous and a traitor. But that man has a target on his back, and he knows he has to be rock solid with everything he says. And we're so surprised. We are just so surprised. We're like Monsieur Renault in Casablanca. I'm shocked to find that there's gambling going on. We are shocked to find that there are civilians being slaughtered in a war that George Bush started with no identifiable enemy. Or goal. Or outcome. Or exit strategy. But we're shocked. Just like we were shocked when we found out that prison guards we had sent from prisons in Maryland went to Abu Ghraib in Iraq and treated the Iraqis there like they treat the Americans here. We're shocked because, after all, we're so damn good. No, we're not. You know, and I know. We're not. We can. We can be. But it takes work. An addict knows he can be clean. A drunk knows he can be sober. But it takes work. And until the work is done, you get my meaning, I hope. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, your phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. CWA Local 1180 in New York City will meet this week with Health and Hospitals Corporation officials to iron out the details of adding 1,300 new union members to the Communications Workers of America. The workers have coordinating manager titles. The CWA won a dispute, finally allowing these workers to be classified as union workers. It was a 12-year battle. New York City's Office of Collective Bargaining Certification Board ruled in favor of the union. These workers are expected to immediately get compensation for hours worked outside of their regular duty hours, night and weekend hours, that went unpaid when the workers were not members of a union. The CWA says it's thrilled to welcome these 1,300 new members in New York City.
A lawsuit filed in New Jersey that could force DuPont to clean up the water supply because of potential contamination from Teflon-related chemicals has the support of the union representing 1,800 DuPont employees. The United Steelworkers announced their endorsement of the suit on Friday. The suit specifically targets the area surrounding the company's Chamber Works plant. It would require the company to not only clean the water system, but DuPont would also have to monitor the health of residents in the surrounding area. DuPont produces a chemical known as PFOA to create products at the plant. PFOA is believed to have carcinogenic properties.
Fresh off a victory after a lockout in Las Vegas at Medco, a national mail-order pharmacy, the United Steelworkers Union is now in negotiations at Medco facilities in Tampa, Florida and Columbus, Ohio. 1,100 workers are involved. Workers locked out in Las Vegas got 10.5% wage increases over the life of their new contract, and no changes can be made in their health care for the duration of the agreement.
Union officials for city employees in Buffalo, New York, are considering setting up a picket line at this week's Democratic State Convention. The City Control Board has frozen city employee wages, and the Buffalo Central Labor Council has been seeking to avoid the confrontation if a meeting can be arranged with Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Police, fire, teachers, blue and white-collar workers are considering the picket option in an attempt to have the wage freeze lifted. The convention begins on Tuesday.
Here's the Wynn Economic Report. Health savings plans are the cornerstone of President Bush's plan to rein in health care costs. According to the New York Times, health savings plans are high-deductible insurance policies that people can obtain through work or insurance companies. High-deductible means individuals will pay the first $1,050 of their medical expenses. Who benefits from this plan? Individuals who have enough money to fund these savings accounts and also have the ability to pay the first $1,000 of medical expenses.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
All right, I'm better now. No, I'm not. I'm not better at all. Now, I've just watched this quote from this mother of this corporal all day long, and it never gets any better. It's like watching a movie about a historical event. If it's if it's well done enough, you'll actually sit there even though you know how it ends. It's like Elizabeth Taylor, Cleopatra, the snakes. You know what's going to go down. But you watch anyway. And the Pentagon, according to a story out yesterday from Reuters, the Pentagon is trying to get congressional approval for a new weapon. And the purpose of this new weapon will be to strike distant targets an hour after they're detected. This was disclosed in the International Herald Tribune. Get this. Okay, you know the Trident II missile that's on our submarines? Nuclear missile, Well, the Pentagon, and by extension the Navy, wants to get non-nuclear tips for these Trident missiles. And stack them, side by side, shipboard, same boat. Submarines are boats. Some of them will be nuclear, some of them won't be nuclear, and nobody will ever make a mistake. And General James Cartwright, head of the U.S. Strategic Command, said the system would allow U.S. forces to attack targets conventionally and precisely and, quote, limit the collateral damage. Jesus criminy, we can't limit the collateral damage when the soldiers who are doing the killing of the people that are looking down a rifle barrel, and we can't limit the collateral damage, but we're going to do it with a nuclear submarine from, 1,000 miles away. Is there something we can get for these generals to do besides, figuring out new ways to kill civilians? Well, then, you'll notice he said, we'll limit the collateral damage. He didn't say we'll eliminate it. He said we'll limit it because, some collateral damage is acceptable. Give me another hummingbird tongue. Kurt Vonnegut says that psychotic people, PPs, as he refers to them, are in charge of the government now. They're not being mean, it's just a clinical term, people with no conscience. Some people are born without a hand. Some people are born without a conscience. It's George Bush. And most of the people that he's hired to, or he has put into, promoted to run the military right now. I'll have acceptable, limited, collateral damage. Jeez. Well, I'm sorry. I hate to keep people waiting on the phone while I have a little aneurysm. Gene is with us, calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, actually, I'm doing. I've got a lot of work to do tonight, but the Haditha wasn't what I called in about, but since you brought it up, a couple points
sorry.
I can make. It's all sure. Right. No, I'm glad. I'm thinking that maybe, and maybe I'm being an apologist here, and I don't mean to be. I don't mean to come up sounding that way, but when you've got a soldier that's got his third or fourth tour of duty again, wouldn't you think a Haditha would be more likely to happen?
Sure. I mean, it's more likely to happen in this war than, say, a defensive war. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. And no, I mean, I don't hate the guys who did it. I don't hate them. I hate the people who put them in that position. I hate the people who rotated them through three and four times. You know, well, we didn't get you on the first pass through the meat grinder, but we'll get you on the second trip. You know, my God. No, I understand what you're saying, Gene. I absolutely understand.
Oh, I don't hate them either. I just think this is a good argument for a draft now. I mean, it would be nice. It would be nice if, and it would be nice if everybody got drafted, including the SUV driving folk. So that was one question that, or one thing I wanted to put up. The other thing I wanted to ask about was this thing with the whistleblower deal that's going down to the Supreme Court. Now, in terms of the war in Iraq, would this apply to the soldiers that, smuggle out film and all that jazz?
You mean, or maybe a soldier who? No, I don't think so. Now I'm speaking ex cathedra, Gene. I don't think so because the soldiers are explicitly covered under the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Okay, I was just being a little bit paranoid, and that kind of thing. What I did call about was I wanted to say real quickly about the enterprise, the Conservative Enterprise Institute, or whatever that is. What family farm? What family farm?
Yeah, right.
It's like these are factory farms. They could stand to be broken up and all that jazz, which I'd love.
Well, not just that, but you know, going all the way back, you know, I can remember hearing right wing yammer heads babbling on about the wetlands.
Uh-huh.
The Wetlands Act, saying, you know, and the way the right wing painted it, you know, if you had a piece of ground that stayed, kind of sloppy throughout the year, well, you had a wetland, and by God, you couldn't do anything. Oh, you couldn't dig a hole in that. You know, and they, you know, Gene, they just lie.
Oh, yeah, they do lie, and we actually would love to see a progressive farm policy on this, because I don't hear, other than breaking up the factory farms, which we do a lot, I'd love to actually see a progressive farm policy. Somebody come up with something somewhere just to be able to reach the rural population that Bush so loves. And lastly, since Alito was the swing vote on the court deal, I remember a couple of years ago where they were talking when Bush first got in that said, well, they want to do this in Washington, then they want to do this in your home state. And I was thinking to myself, God, could you imagine, like, the Alito process with the protesters and stuff at somebody's state assembly or legislature? That would be just horrid.
Yeah.
Which is why I sent you the that local thing on Oregon. I thought you might find it interesting. Anyway, I'll let you get back to your work, and you have a good day.
All right. Thank you, Gene. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah. Have a good
day. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Gene in Oregon. Gene finds all kinds of cool stuff and ships it to me. A lot of it I just read and sort of absorb for later use, because, you know, you never know when one brain cell is going to bang into another and you're going to come out with something brilliant, or at least, you know, tolerable in my case. Coming up on 19 minutes before the hour, Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. Good to talk to you. Oh, sorry. Missed that. We lost Bob. Well, that's fine. You're free to try back. You're all free to try. You know, if you've got something on your mind, jump right in. Gene mentioned a couple of stories that I did want to get to, and now is as good a time as any. It's one of those, shh, you're never going to guess what happened today kind of things. Samuel Alito, Sammy Bad Breath, made his presence known today on the Supreme Court. You remember last week when we had the story from John Roberts about how he wanted more consensus 9-0 decisions? Guess what? Not so much. You know, he wants consensus if it's his consensus. Just read to you straight from the Associated Press report. The Supreme Court on Tuesday made it harder for government employees to file lawsuits claiming they were retaliated against for going public with allegations of official misconduct. By a 5-4 vote, justices said the nation's 20 million public employees do not have carte blanche free speech rights, which by my reading is rather of a superfluous or redundant or just stupid writing. Do not have carte blanche free speech rights. Well, if you got free speech rights, unless they're carte blanche, they ain't free speech rights. I mean, I think you get what I'm saying. They do not have carte blanche free speech rights to disclose government's inner workings. The tiebreaker was cast by none other than newly minted justice. And what a vulgar word people like this man turn that word into. New justice, Samuel Alito. He cast the tiebreaker. Justice Kennedy wrote the majority opinion. And this is a quote from the opinion. He said the First Amendment does not cover or protect, quote, every statement a public employee makes in the course of doing his or her job. Yeah, that's another one of those just let the marble roll around on the wheel for a while and clatter around a little bit and just. The First Amendment does not protect every statement a public employee makes in the course of doing his or her job. Yeah, how about that? Does not cover everything. I guess we're going to need a laundry list of what ain't covered. Now, this is the case that was argued twice in the term. Once it was argued when Sandra Day O'Connor was on the bench, but she retired and they didn't reach a decision before then, so it was re-argued in front of Sammy Bad Breath. Nah, I'm not going to remind you of the stuff that he voted in favor of when he was circuit court of appeals judge. You all know. You remember. Now, the case comes out of the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office. They said that prosecutor Richard Ceballos was constitutionally protected, the appeals court did, when he wrote a memo questioning whether a county sheriff's deputy had lied in a search warrant affidavit. And he was retaliated against, Ceballos was. He was demoted and denied a promotion because he spoke up. That's where we are. That's that first little step Sammy Alito has taken us on down the road to a sort of fascist perdition, isn't it? In the dissent, Justice John Paul Stevens, one of the last real justices remaining on the court, Stevens wrote, quote, public employees are still citizens while they're in the office. The notion that there is a categorical difference between speaking as a citizen and speaking in the course of one's employment is quite wrong. Guess what this says? This is precedent. You know, I mean, we realize that under the system that we have here, every decision, with the exception of Bush versus Gore, because they said that wasn't precedent, that was just a one-time deal. That was just a one-off screwing, and oh no, we'll never use that one as precedent. Every Supreme Court opinion is meaningful. What did they say during the Clinton impeachment? Words mean things. Words mean things. And these words mean something, and they scare the hell out of me. Every statement a public employee makes in the course of doing his or her job is not necessarily protected speech. I want to know which words aren't protected speech. In this particular instance, that sheriff deputy lied on the search warrant application is apparently not protected speech. But, you know, this comes from a bunch of thugs, and you know who they are. It's Alito, it's Roberts, it's Scalia, it's Slappy Thomas. Oh, come on, who's the fifth one? Help me here. Oh, well, screw it. This is chilling, all right. This isn't chilling. This is ice damned cold. Because this is an instance of literally a guy saying, you know, I think the guy lied on the search warrant. And he was punished for it. No, but what I was saying, this is a court. Scalia has written in the past that just because you're innocent doesn't mean you have a right not to be executed in this country. I ain't kidding. He said that. Really. Just because you are innocent, just because you did not do the crime, does not automatically mean that you have a right not to be executed in this country. Just because you did not do the crime, according to Antonin Scalia, and this is the law of the land, just because you didn't do the crime does not mean that the government cannot strap you to a crucifix that is horizontally oriented and run needles into your veins and make you go bye-bye like a dog. You got it? That's where the... So, you know, Pentagon Papers, under this ruling, you can punish the guy who lets out the Pentagon Papers. Somebody whistleblows on, Watergate break-in, you can punish that guy. Mark Felts, Deep Throat, if they could have caught him, they could have punished him under this decision. This is a clear warning to public employees all across this once great nation to sit down and shut up. Kennedy noted in his ruling that there are whistleblower protection laws. The ruling, which had the votes of the court's conservative judges, including Roberts, showed great deference to the government. Well, of course you're... Yeah, deference to the damn crown! Official communications have official consequences, creating a need for substantive consistency and clarity. Supervisors must ensure that their employees' official communications are accurate, demonstrate sound judgment, and promote the employer's mission. So in this particular case, Gil Garcetti, the district attorney of Los Angeles County, needed to promote his mission by demoting and punishing Mr. Ceballos, who found out that a sheriff's deputy was lying on a search warrant application. Good for you, Supremes. We're so proud of you. We're just so proud. Shall we stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance? Let's don't and say we didn't. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. You feeling better?
Somewhat.
Good.
You know, as far as this Whistleblowing Protection Act, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you've ever been in federal service or not, but not a whole lot's changed, Bob. Because basically, if you blew the whistle on somebody in the federal workplace, regardless of what it was, they would come back and nail your ass to the wall. They found a way to do it, and they've just made it legal now.
Yeah, they can't do it. But before, they couldn't do it officially. They at least had to make the effort to be really sleazy and do it.
Well, you know, they just come right out and do it. And I'll tell you what Bush has done. He has basically repaid, you know, for a while there, he was in very serious trouble with his right-wing religious base, okay? You know, those people, those extreme religious fanatics who hate Catholics and everybody else. You know what I'm saying? And he basically owed them a debt. And he couldn't pay it. So he paid it back to them by putting in Roberts. And then, of course, when he tried to put in that woman, Miss Harriet Myers, they went nuts. And then he has Mr. Alito. I don't know if Mr. Alito, I don't know the state of his dental health or not, or his oral health, but I just call him Mr. Alito, but he was the one who voted for...
Well, Alito is Italian for breath.
No. Well, whatever. But anyway.
And he is Samuel M. Alito. That makes it Malito, which means bad breath in Italian.
Oh.
Jim, that's where that comes from.
But anyway, you know, basically, this thing of whistleblowing, unfortunately, you would really have to be protected by some very, very powerful people for your supervisors not to have you transferred, demoted, early retired, all types of things. And a number of these things are have been going on. I'm not defending them. I'm just...
No, I understand. But do you see what Mr. Ceballos was doing? Or maybe it's Mrs. Ceballos. No, I think it's a guy. What he was saying is, okay, yeah, it was all done to me, but it was wrong. And under the Constitution of this country, I have a right to petition the court for redress of grievances.
Now, what does this Mr. Ceballos do? Or Ms. Ceballos do?
He was an assistant district attorney for Los Angeles County, and he found out that a sheriff's deputy lied on a search warrant application, and he talked about it.
Oh, this is under Gil Garcetti when
he
was in charge.
Yeah, well, Garcetti versus Ceballos.
Garcetti's long since left the legal arena. He's a big time photographer now and does coffee table books.
But the styling of the case still remains what it is.
Oh,
and
I know.
Makes its way through the
but
process.
Garcetti, you know, when he was defeated in 2000, he decided he would take his camera and go his separate ways. But so, I mean, he seems to be pretty happy with himself. But what I'm saying is, this whistleblowing thing, and when they started to erode Title V rights with Homeland Security and stuff like that, and putting all these agencies under one head and this, that, and the other, it's just one of many efforts to attempt to drown government in the bathtub. That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Well, or on the other hand, Jim, they're trying to protect. You know, they're trying to protect it as if it were some sort of regal thing. This is literally, I wasn't kidding. Under this kind of decision, you could have done anything you wanted to the guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers.
Who was that, Ellsworth?
Daniel Ellsworth, exactly. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I couldn't come up with the name off the top of my head.
Well, apparently, when the Pentagon Papers came out, they were definitely the explanation for the Vietnam War and what happened and what went wrong there. And they're trying to probably prevent a similar thing from happening with this Iraqi war, but I don't think that they can really cover that up too much anymore, because now I understand we have our own My Lai version over there now with those 24 civilians. Last November, was it?
Yeah.
And now that's coming to the fore, and unfortunately, I'm sure ashes will sting, and I believe you need. There are enough mesos to hang them on, that's for sure, for this, and I don't know what happened or how it happened, but in the fog of war, in this horrible situation in which we found ourselves, unfortunately, these are the byproducts of these actions, which were originally mislaid and miscarried. It should never have occurred in the first place. But now that we're there, what can we do?
Well,
What can we do? I mean, you know.
We cannot perpetrate these massacres, for starters. I think that's a good place, don't you?
Yeah.
We cannot burn out the troops that we do have.
Well, now they're going to send 1,500 more over there, and they say they're going to draw down. I mean, I don't understand this.
Darndest drawdown I ever saw, adding more and calling it a drawdown.
And plus they have, I think, stop loss is still in effect.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
Okay.
So,
I mean, now that we're there, how in the world can we get out of that place with any modicum of decency or any modicum of whatever without the whole place collapsing in on itself and being a bloodbath?
Well, the question is, if we stay there, well, it's not really a question. This is an assertion on my part, Jim. If we stay, it collapses on itself. If we leave, it collapses on itself.
Well, now, do we want it? It's going to collapse on us, just like Pharaoh's army in the Red Sea.
Or just like the French at Dien Bien Phu.
Well, exactly. And I just wonder when in the world, I mean, we hear this stay the course, stay the course, stay the course, but I mean, that's just a shibboleth which can only last much, it can't last much longer.
Well, at some point, you know, do you remember, and I'm, you know, you're a little bit older than me, Jim, so you, I'm sure you do. You remember Nixon constantly babbling on about peace with honor? You remember that phrase?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Well, yeah, we're going to start hearing that fairly soon. We're going to start hearing about how it's, well, you know, we've got to find a way to exit Iraq with, oh, what will it be, dignity and fortitude, or, you know, something equally smarmy and stupid and impossible. We did not exit Vietnam and achieve peace with honor.
No, there is no substitute for victory, and that is the truth. I mean, you know, I think MacArthur was the one who said that, but I mean, and from a military standpoint, there is no substitute for victory. You're either defeated or you win.
Right.
That's it. And, you know?
I tried to explain to people who were very vociferously opposed to my position at the beginning of this war that we lost it before we ever started it. This was an unwinnable war because it was evilly begun. And I'm not speaking about the troops in this instance. I'm speaking about the people who started it and misused the troops.
Well, most wars are evil to begin, to tell you the truth. But, I mean, from any moral standpoint, because war is basically an instrument of national policy in which you try to take something that belongs to somebody else and make it your own. That's essentially what it's about, in my opinion. That may be overly simple.
Well, right. World War II was evilly begun, but we didn't begin it.
No, it's true. We didn't. We basically...
And we have proven... We've proven ourselves in this nation of being at our best when we are not running around starting wars.
And this is one, unfortunately, that we, it's really, I mean, we literally have a tar baby here. I mean, the more we get involved in it, the stickier it gets, and the tar baby syndrome definitely applies. Our flypaper, whatever analogy you want to use.
Yeah, and you asked the question, how do we get out, or, you know, can we get out with a semblance of anything? No, all we can do is get out. If we get out today, that means a few less Americans die in the process. If we get out tomorrow, more Americans die, and more Americans the day after that. There will be another 1,000 before we start talking about getting out, and the list of dead will be 5,000 long before we're gone, if not 10,000 or 20,000, and that is the tragedy of this. The young men and women are going to suffer and die for all of this stupidity, Jim, while a bunch of dithering old men and women sit around talking about honor and dignity.
Well, I don't think these people really have an understanding of what those three words really mean, for they would not have perpetrated this hoax upon the American people in the first place. But that's just my personal opinion about the Iraq.
Well, no, I think you're right. They talk about it, but they have no concept of what it is. Jim, we're up against the top of the hour. Glad to know you're feeling a little bit better. We've got to roll on and into the news. Thank you very kindly, and have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
Likewise. Out here.
Bye now. News time. You want to get on the program? You know how to do it. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network. Get on the horn, 304-658-5453. Or 1-877-4-HEAD-ON.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Washington area sniper John Allen Muhammad was convicted of 6 more murders Tuesday at a trial in which he acted as his own attorney and the prosecution's star witness was his young protege and partner in crime. Muhammad, 45, is already under a death sentence in Virginia for a killing there. The most he can get for the 6 Maryland slayings is life in prison without parole. The jury took slightly more than 4 hours to convict Muhammad after a 4-week trial. The FBI is wrapping up its 2-week search of a suburban Detroit horse farm after finding no trace of former Teamsters boss Jimmy Hoffa's remains, a local prosecutor said Tuesday. Oakland County Prosecutor David Gorka told the Associated Press he was informed by Bloomfield Township Police that the search was ending without any remains found at the Hidden Dreams Farm in Milford Township, Michigan. Iraq will investigate allegations that U.S. Marines carried out a massacre of civilians in Haditha in November, the country's prime minister has said. Nouri Maliki told Reuters news agency that there was a limit to the acceptable excuses for civilian casualties. The Pentagon is close to ending its own inquiries into the deaths, initially attributed to a clash with militants. Observers say the incident could deal a more serious blow to U.S. standing than the Abu Ghraib scandal. George Bush first learned of reports that U.S. Marines killed 24 unarmed Iraqi civilians only after reporters began asking questions, the White House said Tuesday. In other Iraq news, car bombs targeting Shiite areas tore through a car dealership in southern Iraq and a bustling outdoor market north of Baghdad Tuesday as attacks nationwide killed 54 people and wounded 120 more in the bloodiest day in recent weeks. Iraqi officials also said a key terror suspect who allegedly confessed to hundreds of beheadings was captured in a raid that also netted documents, cell phones, and computers that contained information on other wanted terrorists and Islamic extremist groups. The Supreme Court today scaled back protections for government workers who blow the whistle on official misconduct, a 5-4 decision in which new Justice Samuel Alito cast the deciding vote. In a victory for the Bush administration, justices said that 20 million public employees do not have free speech protections for what they say as part of their jobs. Critics predicted the impact would be sweeping, from silencing police officers who fear retribution for reporting department corruption to subduing federal employees who want to reveal problems with government hurricane preparedness or terrorist-related security. Supporters said that it will protect governments from lawsuits filed by disgruntled workers pretending to be legitimate whistleblowers. You're listening to News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Hey, this is Michelle Branch, and I'm part of a program called Empower. Mental health problems are real, common, and treatable. To learn more, visit empoweryouth.org. That's the letter M, poweryouth.org.
The European Union acted illegally when it agreed to transfer airline passenger data to the United States as part of U.S. efforts to fight terrorism, the bloc's highest court said on Tuesday. The United States, the Executive European Commission, and European Airlines said the ruling would have no immediate impact on transatlantic air travel and left time to find an agreed solution to the data transfer issue. Under a May 2004 EU-US agreement, European airlines have been obliged to give U.S. authorities 34 items of information on passengers flying to the United States, including name, address, and all forms of payment and contact telephone numbers. The United States insisted the transfer of personal details was essential to fight terrorism following the September 11 attacks on New York and Washington by suicide plane hijackers. But the European Parliament challenged the deal, contending it had no legal basis and infringed fundamental rights. George Bush on Tuesday named Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson to be the next Treasury Secretary, succeeding Jon Snow. Bush made the announcement at a brief White House ceremony flanked by Paulson and Snow, whose resignation had been widely expected. In his remarks, Bush said the Treasury Secretary would be the leading force on his economic team, as well as the chief spokesman for his economic policies, and he praised Paulson's experience and integrity. Federal authorities are actively investigating dozens of American television stations for broadcasting items produced by the Bush administration and major corporations and then passing them off as normal news. Some of the fake news segments talked of success in the war on Iraq or promoted the company's products. Investigators from the Federal Communications Commission are seeking information about stations across the country after a report produced by a campaign group detailed the extraordinary extent of such items. The report by the nonprofit group Center for Media and Democracy found that over a 10-month period, at least 77 television stations were making use of the faux news broadcasts known as video news releases. Not one told viewers who had produced the items.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I am Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's your nightly confrontation of the facts. We're heading toward the summer solstice in not too much longer. Yeah, there will come a time when the sun's barely set when this show is completed. So, it's your daily confrontation with the facts. It's your confrontation with the facts, doggone it. I am informed via email that I sound like a crazy... Maybe I am. Maybe I am just crazier than a sprayed roach for thinking that America is a better place than to tolerate the likes of George Bush and Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and Condi Rice and Richard Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay and Rick Santorum and Bill Frist, don't let me forget Bill Frist, and the whole filthy crowd of people who jumped around and yelled and screamed and were so, so happy when the bombs started falling on the children in Iraq. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I am. But if that's the case, I want to be crazy. Because when I get to the day when I can sit and talk about acceptable civilian losses, which are, after all, regrettable but unavoidable in a time of war, then I will know that at that point in time, if there is a hell, then my spot has been assured in it. You dig? When I can look up and say that, well, it's okay if somebody dies as long as, you know, this ain't Star Trek. This isn't Spock with his hand up against the glass saying that, talking about the good of the many or the good of the one. That's a bunch of hooey. The question is put before us, and I think Jim put it very ably. How do we get out of this mess? We've gotten in it. Now, how do we get out of it? Let me explain something. And the best way, you know, anybody who is listening who has ever had a problem with gambling. Because this is a problem, you know. I've used the analogy of the addict and the analogy of the drunk and the problem gambler. What's next? All of these are diagnosable conditions that are problems for individuals. We have a culture or a national problem on a national scale that is comparable to that. We thought that there was some way. I mean, you know, I've joked from time to time that the lottery is my retirement plan. That's crazy thinking. And if you talk to people in the addiction recovery business, and I don't care what kind of addiction, they will tell you that when it gets bad enough, that the addict will start engaging in magical thinking. That somehow things are just going to come around and they're going to somehow just right themselves without any action or any corrective action on the part of the addict. That the addict's life is just going to get better someday and the addict doesn't have to work on it. That is where we are. Whether it's Condi or Cheney or Rumsfeld or D. Dear Leader or any of these filthy maggot murderers that purport to lead this country. Any of them, they are all engaged in the same utterly insane magical thinking that the addict manifests. Because they're all sitting there saying, well, you know, if we stay 2 years, we'll stay 2 years in Iraq and elect their own government and it'll get better. It'll get better. We'll stay 3 years. After 3 years, it'll get better. That's when it'll be better, after 3 years. Okay, not three, five years. 5 years, it'll get better. And then we can leave. And if you ask him, you know, how's it going to get better? It just will. It's just one day we're going to get up, it'll be okay. Agnes says I'm putting an alcoholic or an addict in that category. It's the same category, dear. Except for the fact that, these monsters, these murderers, these killers did it willfully and did it intentionally and did it arguably sober. But, you know, the A Man Without a Country, Kurt Vonnegut. Like I mentioned earlier, he says the PPs are in charge of the country. The psychotic people. People who are born without consciences. Only if you don't have a conscience, or if your conscience is so stunted and poorly developed, and I'm describing the average Republican voter in the United States, and when I say that, can you engage in thinking that says that someday it'll all be okay, and we can come home and we'll have a parade. That's right, we'll have a parade. It'll be so much fun. We'll have a parade, and the high school band will march, and the majorettes will be there, and the riding club will come along, and the clowns will come along behind the riding club with the little brooms and the dustpans, and they'll clean up the horse poo, and it'll be a parade, and it'll be because Iraq is a happy place, and it ain't gonna happen. Because magical thinking never happens. It is never okay. We talked a week or so ago about Al Gore referencing being a recovering politician on step 9. See, there's no recovery right now for this crowd. They don't understand, they don't want to understand, they're not capable of understanding. That hardcore, weird, little, sick, cancerous knot of people that think they are my fellow Americans but are anything but Americans, who still insist on supporting this insane megalomaniac at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, they don't want to understand, that they cannot be led to understand, and they think what we need now is another war. And I submit to you that that is certifiable, diagnostic and statistical manual, fourth edition, mentally ill processing. What thing, what combination of things is going to make it so that American children, you know, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, what's going to make it so that they can come home, or that they don't have to rotate through another time? What's going to make it so that the veterans home from Iraq don't commit suicide by cop? You know, that's become a term in our culture now, and we've had several stories about it. A guy's getting ready to rotate back to Iraq, so he knocks off a liquor store and then makes the cops kill him. Oh, there's been a couple of those stories out there. Bobby was just crazy. No, crazy is going back willingly. That's the thing. We've got our ideas of crazy, insane, all mixed up. What, Jean-Paul Sartre said that the only sane people are the suicides? He said the only meaningful question in life is whether or not to kill yourself? A bit extreme for me. But we're being forced into an extreme time. And this gang that thinks, you know, well, just one magical thing. Well, please, just one magical thing take place in Iraq. We can all just come home. You know, a lot of people forget that when Dorothy got in the balloon, she didn't make it to Kansas. And neither are we. Neither are we. I tell you what, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do some phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. You tell me, who's crazy? Is it me? I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
The cold surrender in the dark has gone down to the middleman. Now that it's time to leave the ground and maybe try to understand.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
that's going to help. Oh, that's some seriously disturbed music, Agnes, dear. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Tuesday night, and I'm just so glad to be with you after we sorted out our technical issues from yesterday evening and had so much fun. I did. I hope Bruce Birch and John Fox had as much fun as I did last night. And if you were able to join us for that program, I hope you enjoyed it as well, because that was three of the fastest hours I think I have ever been involved with in all my years behind a microphone. Let's go to the phones. Andrew, I've made Andrew wait too. And I'm doing okay, Andrew. Sorry you had to wait, man.
No, you're not the only one that's crazy. I'm crazy.
Good.
They're crazy, but we're crazy. We're good crazy. Our hair's on fire because we see what's going on. So them, on the other hand, I don't know. They need some medications and a padded cell or something like that.
Well, you know, they'll get better if they just get to say the Pledge of Allegiance in, you know, the middle of the road or something.
Yeah, from that cardboard box they got propped over a subway vent. But living out in the street. But the Alito, you know, the Alito decision, his gag order. Oh.
Yeah.
That's just disgusting. Like Jim said, it just makes it legal. I mean,
well, and the thing is, it's a real shiv in the ribs to government employees.
Oh, yeah.
But what I was trying to get across is that this thing, it's not going to just apply to whistleblowers.
No, it's not. This is just like you said before, it's the precedent. That's it. Now they have the Supreme Court precedent. And now you'll have the lower courts, you know, quoting that. Quote.
And remember, this is a government that likes to clarify things. Remember how we had to clarify the Clean Water Act to make sure that everybody understand you could dump any kind of crap in the water you wanted to, and we had to clarify the Clean Air Act to make sure we could get plenty of mercury into it.
Mm-hmm.
They just clarified the First Amendment, and we're going to get clarified right out of our republic.
Yes, that is true, and that's the way it's headed right now, and. I mean, the train's not slowing down. I mean, you have scandals after scandal breaking, just all-out rule law breaking by the president and his minions, and it's like, what's going to stop it? I mean, this train has no brakes.
Yeah, and the thing is, where Alito and Scalia and that whole weird little Opus Dei cabal that they've got going there, you know this, right? I mean, we're talking about Alito, Roberts, Scalia, and
Thomas.
Opus Dei. I mean, you know, the guys that wear the barbed wire around their legs and stuff. they're on there for life. Okay. You know, we get, God willing, we get shed of Dear Leader on January 2009.
It's like a stench just, you know, hanging forever until they pass on.
There's every chance in the world that John Roberts's and Alito's tenures on the court will exceed the scope of my life if I live to be a very old man.
Yes, it will. And I was talking with a friend of mine, and we were saying, like, you know, Supreme Court justice should not be just presidential appointments. I mean, that should be something that the people vote on, because, like you said, they're lifetime appointments. It's not like they have terms, and I don't see the need to have, you know, lifetime appointments on the Supreme Court. That's not, it's too high of an office, and it should be elected. It should be an elected office.
Or make it an appointive office and give it, I mean, everybody else, you know, the Republicans wanted term limits for everybody else, but they don't want term limits on the Supreme Court?
Yeah. I mean,
20 years is enough time for Scalia and Alito and that crowd to screw up America. 20 years and say goodbye.
Appointments work fine until you know, like, exploit them like this. You know, this is heinous. What you know they're doing? It's crazy. See, this can make an argument where you say, well, Supreme Court justices should not have lifetime appointments because you get rogue character activist judges like them on the bench by an activist.
Yeah, exactly. There's your activist judges.
You know.
Well, see, the thing is, historically speaking, Andrew, the framers of the Constitution and had a very good reason for setting up the judiciary the way that they did. You know, they serve by appointment and they serve on good behavior. Otherwise, they serve for life. Mm-hmm. And the reason they did that was they understood, first of all, it was a system, they had contrived a system that had no factions and no political parties, and they hoped it would stay that way.
Yep.
And so what they were looking for was an opportunity to take the really brilliant legal minds and put them up there and just let them be brilliant legal minds.
Mm-hmm. Just
and sort the stuff out. Right.
Yeah. Interpret the Constitution.
But the ink wasn't even dry on the Constitution before we had Federalists and Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first great constitutional crisis embodied in Marbury versus Madison has to do with a factional fight between Federalists and Republicans.
It's
been downhill ever since.
Yeah, it has. Because now everybody's vying, you know, to put their, if they can appoint Supreme Court justices, then, you know, they know that will be their, you know, biggest legacy because it's a lifetime appointment. And their ideals and everything will be, the Constitution will be interpreted within that framework of their ideas, whether how rogue they are or how democratic they are. So
yeah, I don't even know. Has a Supreme Court justice, Andrew, do you know, has a Supreme Court justice ever been impeached and removed from the bench?
There might have been one that almost got impeached. I don't know if he got impeached, but I read an article a long time ago about that, you know, a few months ago. And somebody's name popped up or whatever, but I can't recall right now.
Well, Abraham Lincoln threatened to throw Justice Roger Taney, threatened to throw him in prison over the Dred Scott decision. But I can't recall one ever being actually impeached and removed.
Yeah, but they can. But I mean,
yeah,
take a lot. But
but we got a court where a significant justice goes out duck hunting. With Dick Cheney.
And
can't even be persuaded to remove himself from the case out of honor and dignity and avoiding the appearance, mind you, the appearance of impropriety. Won't do that.
They don't care about they are impropriety on its face, that's what they are. They don't care about appearances. I mean, look
exactly.
What they're pulling, man. They're breaking into, you know, representatives' offices and just usurping the Constitution. I mean, they're passing this.
Yeah, and let's say this thing with busting into Congressman Jefferson's office. Let's say this makes it to the Supreme Court. Want to guess how that's going to shake out? Roberts, Scalia, yeah. Alito, Thomas.
Thomas, yeah.
And who's the one I'm forgetting?
Who is that one?
Scalia, Alito, Thomas, Roberts.
Who's that?
There's one other. Kennedy.
Yes.
There's your five votes to allow George Bush to use the executive branch to intimidate anybody that he wants to in the other two branches.
And just like
the Congress didn't get upset about our Fourth Amendment rights until their Article II rights were violated.
Yep.
Well, the Article III judiciary will not get upset until George Bush sends somebody to rifle through their drawers.
Which will be soon. But, I'm just saying with this decision, like how they might try and implement it in the private sector and what have you, and suppress the free speech and, you know.
Oh, sure.
On other levels, other than, you know, just whistleblowing. And that's a big one there.
But the sad thing is, if great big mega corporation of America sues and says its free speech rights have been abridged by not being able to filthy up the political system with more money, those same five will go, damn right.
Mm-hmm.
Poor baby, your speech was abridged. Your First Amendment rights were violated.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I despise them, Andrew.
Yeah. That's all that was. Because they were already doing that anyway. If you blew the whistle on them, they were going to get you one way or the other.
Well, that was Jim's point. I think he's right.
Yeah, and he's right about that. So this just made it legal now so they can do something else with it. So that's all I wanted to chime in on tonight. And just want to say hello.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. It's always good to talk to you.
Yep. Nice talking
to you. You take care up there in New York, will you?
It's hot up here.
Well, you deserve a little bit of that once a year. I mean,
yeah, well, but I can't stand the heat, you know. I don't like when it gets real hot and muggy, and that's how it gets up here.
Yeah, you should try what we're, I mean, you know, it's not even June yet, and it was 92 degrees outside.
Yeah, we was around 90 yesterday ourselves, and today we are close to 90, if not 90.
Thank God there's no global warming.
Oh, yeah, really.
It'd be 100.
Poison ivy. It's so strong.
You take it easy, Andrew.
Right. Yep, take it easy.
Bye now. All right, let's take a break. It's time for our Cup of Joe report, I do believe. Man, did Joe Vecchio just have an awesome, if you were with us for the late night show last night when we got to run it, did Joe just have a fantastic report? I think it was the best I ever heard him do. I really, really do. So we got a break coming up. Oh, good. Yeah, that's a good idea, Agnes. Play it again tonight for folks who might not have heard it. This is worth a second time around. It's by far, it is absolutely Joe's finest work. So after that, if you want to get in on the conversation, you know how to do it. It's real easy. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Email bob@headonradio.com. We're still working on telegraphy. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Joe Vecchio with a special Cup of Joe report. It's Memorial Day, the day we honor those who gave their lives in the service of their country. But sometimes I think that when we focus on the soldiers themselves, we don't look closely enough at why they had to do so. In the Gettysburg Address, Lincoln laid it out clearly. We owe it to those who gave their lives to dedicate ourselves to the unfinished business of creating a more perfect Union. It's an unfortunate truth that there have been many times in our history where our cause was not so noble. All too often we mistake nationalism for patriotism and have taken away the freedom of others so that we can enjoy greater luxuries for ourselves. If we are all, as Jefferson wrote, endowed with the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, then that must be true for everyone, not only Americans. At Gettysburg, Lincoln was speaking specifically about saving the Union, but in a greater sense he meant much more. He was talking about saving humanity. The millions who have died did not do so for the vanity and glory of any king or president. They did so to build a better world for their children and also for the children of their former enemies. When we have failed as a nation, it's because we failed to recognize that. Once more, we're at a crossroads in this country. We're losing confidence not just in our government, but in our ability to rule ourselves. It's not the first such crisis we've faced. Should we survive the present one, there are others waiting for us. If we are to make meaningful the sacrifices of those who died, we must rededicate ourselves to being better citizens and to understand our place as free individuals in a greater society and as a great nation among many. Because if we just give up our freedoms because they become an inconvenience, if we allow our sense of loyalty and duty to our country to be exploited by small men with small minds, then we will have failed those we are honoring today. And worse, we will have failed our children, who will have to live with the results of what we do. It's a long, hard road to travel, but all it takes is one step in the right direction. So let's get on our way, for their sake. Let's get to work. For the Head On Radio Network, this is Joe Vecchio.
I should be saying goodnight. We really should.
I like that song. It puts me in a better mood. It won't last, but it does put me in a better mood. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the second half of today's sometimes Tuesday edition. I got to figure out what the language is for that Tuesday edition of Head On. And you know, it's not just accounts by mothers talking about how their sons can't quite get the idea out of their head that they watched a little 7-year-old girl's brains dribble out onto their pants who one of their Marine buddies had slaughtered just a little bit ago. I mean, you know, with the hands tied behind it, on their knees, begging for their lives. I mean, we're not talking about they ran into the bullet. It's all drawn out in Time magazine. If you want to go have a look, they got a little, you know, little charts and graphs and 8x10 color glossy photographs with photos and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. And it's not just that. Now, I had an article yesterday, and you know, stupid me didn't save it. But the gist of it was that coal prices. You know, we pay attention to things like coal. There in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West Virginia, where apparently God thought so little of us that he put all that damn coal under us so some really greedy, hateful people could come and ruin, you know, adults and children's and future lives, you know, trying to get at it. Best thing that could have ever happened to West Virginia and the Appalachians in general, that didn't have any damn coal under it. Okay, I want to share something with you, because I mention this from time to time, and if there are any new listeners online, I want to spread awareness of this, because it's something very near and dear to me. Hell, it matters. You know, I talk about mountain range removal from time to time. Well, in Raleigh County, West Virginia, there's a school, Marsh Fork Elementary School, and yeah, there's a hell of a lot of problems on planet Earth. But this is a problem that's sort of close. I've never been quite so moved than the first time that I drove my family by Marsh Fork Elementary, and Agnes and my children, wonderful, decent, I think we've done a pretty good job so far, knock wood, raising some moral kids, because they looked at us and they said, "Mommy, Daddy, those children have to go to school in that awful place can come live with us and go to school with us." I love the optimism and the simple insight of little people. Because you see, the children at Marsh Fork Elementary School, a quarter mile back and 800 feet up, they have a dirt wall holding back 2 or 3 billion gallons of toxic goo, and it hangs over their heads. And 200 feet from the school, they've got a coal preparation plant that does nothing but every day just churn out filth and grime and dust and poison and chemicals. And hey, kids, breathe some! You see. Big old tank of anhydrous ammonia. That sucker ever cracks open, everybody in that area is dead. Marsh Fork Elementary School is unsafe for children. Now, I tell you all about this because there is a new move afoot. See if you can make the hit counter spin a little bit at penniesofpromise.org. penniesofpromise.org. And what this is an effort to literally penny by penny by penny raise the money it will take to build a new school for the children who go to school in that, and that was a nice school before the sword of Damocles was hung over its head and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde's laboratory was built next to it. Downstream from the 2.8 billion gallons of coal goo. There was a press conference today, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, at the state capitol in Charleston, West Virginia. Coal River Valley citizens got together to announce the launch of penniesofpromise.org. Because testing has been, you see, the state of West Virginia, who is in thrall mostly to coal, filthy, rotten, dirty, stinking, subhuman coal barons like Don Blankenstein, Blankenship, whatever, of Massey Energy. The state of West Virginia went in and took a little, we didn't find any coal poisons. There's no coal toxins in here. Don told us so. Okay? Cool. Well, a real scientist came in. A fellow by the name of D. Scott Simonton. And he collected 7 dust samples from the school. He turned those samples over to Dr. Dewey Sanderson. He's a professor of geology. Dr. Sanderson analyzed the samples, and he found out that there's coal dust present in all 7 samples taken from different points around the school. And he pointed out, you know, it's really not healthy to breathe it. Not a nice thing. Now, what he said, Dr. Simonton's letter says, quote, this dust has known health hazards, especially in the inhalation exposure route. I believe that the inhalation of this dust must be avoided and prevented. I believe that the occupants of Marsh Fork Elementary School are at risk from exposure to the dust emitted from the Goals Coal Facility. That's the outfit that's 225 feet from the school. So, penniesofpromise.org. School children in New York State. Andrew, in New York, be proud of your fellow New Yorkers. School children in New York State gave 86 pounds of pennies. School children in New York are more concerned about their fellow young students in West Virginia than any, virtually any, member of government. So the 86 pounds of pennies, however much has been raised so far, is being delivered to Governor Joe Manchin's office. Our good friend Bo Webb said, quote, our county school board and state government have shirked their responsibility to the kids of Marsh Fork Elementary. Now we, the citizens, have to make sure they have a safe and healthy school in their own community. What did Joe say a couple of minutes ago about calling into question our own ability, our feelings, or our faith in our own ability to govern ourselves? Well, I'm proud of what is being done in the Coal River Valley. Because those people, I consider them my friends. And whether you know it or not, they are your friends. They are willing to govern themselves. And they are willing to take responsibility for the government of which they are a part. Raleigh County Board of Education? Nap, sorry. Useless as teats on a boar, as they used to say. State EPA? Equally useless. Governor's office? Useless. But these people are willing to go out penny by penny by penny and build a new school. Could you help? Yeah, I know. Bob's always got somebody for us to send a check to. Pennies. We're not talking dollars for promise, of promise. We're not talking dollars of promise. We're talking pennies of promise. Pennies. And you know what? You might prevent, in doing so, you might prevent a disaster that is generally referred to as biblical in nature, because when that dam gives way, and not if, but when, it will give way. Everything below it is dead. to get those children a safe school to study and learn in that's not filthied up with Don Blankenship's coal garbage and coal poisons. Maybe you save a life on the immediate run. In the short run, you save a life because they're away from that hellish threat of a miserable drowning death. And maybe you also help by not letting them breathe, you know, instant cancer just to add little kid in air. PenniesOfPromise.org. Do what you can, please. We got a break coming up. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Where's the streetwise Hercules to fight the rising war? Isn't there a white knight upon the fiery steed? Late at night, I toss and I turn and I dream.
Was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
Bio-diesel. It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel man.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. You can make the air taste fresher, breathe as deeply as you please. You create a world of pleasure just by simply planting trees. Adding shade, creating beauty, it's just part of what they're worth. Make the world a better place with trees protecting the good earth. Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share.
This is Mike Love at the Beach Boys. Plant trees where you live. Go to arborday.org.
See, I was about to get lost listening to the music again. I'm Bob Kincaid. About 8 minutes before the hour. Part of the reason for me mentioning the whole penniesofpromise.org campaign has to do with the fact that, you know, we're pretty much like-minded here. We'll disagree on some stuff, but that's okay. But most of the time we share a lot of the same opinions, and there are things that need to be considered. For instance, you know, we've talked about green and clean energy. So, you know, part of that is sometimes considered to be ethanol. I'm more of a biodiesel kind of guy than I am ethanol, but, you know, whatever. But oddly enough, it comes back to these blown up little hills. Because even the people who are making ethanol are trying to do it dirty. And that just makes my little head hurt. Because, you see, coal is becoming cheaper. You know, supply and demand, economics, all that stuff that I found terribly boring in college and wish I'd paid better attention to. Coal is becoming incredibly cheap because production is going through the roof as they blow off mountaintops in Appalachia and dig great big humongous pits in places like Wyoming and Montana. You know, poison the farmers' water out there, that kind of thing. And because production in coal mines is going nonstop. They're trying to the coal mines in Appalachia. They're trying to go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to keep up with production, to make more money for people who haven't yet figured out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. And of course, what you've got is pressure on the United States Environmental Protection Agency, and it's coming from coal and corn producing states. And what they want to do is relax pollution regulations on, you know, we need another clarification. These damn clarifications are just wearing me the hell out. They want another clarification of the Clean Air Act to relax pollution regulations on ethanol plants. Why? So that the ethanol plants can burn filthy, dirty coal almost without any restraint, instead of doing it instead of using natural gas to power the ethanol producers. Only 4 of 100 ethanol plants currently in the U.S. are powered by coal. There are 190 more under construction, or soon to be built. And they want them coal-fired. You know, the environmentalists, you know, we worry about new coal-fired power plants. Guess what? You know that, we got 240 years of coal in the ground, Sergeant Carter. No, we don't. Because, well, you know the business about the exponential growth. But whatever's in the ground, they're going to get. And, you know, so you're thinking, I'm going to power my automobile with ethanol because what's FFV or something kind of alternative fuel vehicle. There's some sort of Detroit designation. So I'm going to be clean and green, and I'm going to burn corn in my gas tank. Well, the ethanol that you're going to put in your gas tank in the next few years, there's a very strong likelihood that some portion of it will have been produced by pumping more coal garbage into our air, into your air, into your future's air. Even being an environmentalist gets to be kind of difficult sometimes. I mentioned I read this wonderful book by Michael Pollan, The Omnivore's Dilemma. And by the time I got done with that thing, well, you know, I don't feel quite so good about going to the organic section of the produce aisle in the grocery store anymore. Because it can't, free-range chicken. My left hind foot. The free-range chickens can't find the door of the damn coop. And that happy cow organic milk with the smiling heifer on the car, Never saw the sunlight. Has never, ever walked in grass, that cow. Oh, but it's organic! The point is, it's hard work being an informed and, attempt to be a moral citizen. We're going to make the ethanol with coal. We're going to get the coal by blowing up the mountains. Well, you can and you know, little kids sit in schools and damn. I get a little disheartened with this stuff sometimes. I really do. An EPA rule clarification. Because you see these ethanol plants, because they're creating clean energy, here's the fun part, because they're creating clean energy, we're going to let the ethanol plants burn the coal as dirty as they want to. Brother. Well, let's do the news. Let's do. If you want to get involved, 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Washington area sniper John Allen Muhammad was convicted of 6 more murders Tuesday at a trial in which he acted as his own attorney, and the prosecution's star witness was his young protege and partner in crime. Muhammad, 45, is already under a death sentence in Virginia for a killing there. The most he can get for the 6 Maryland slayings is life in prison without parole. The jury took slightly more than 4 hours to convict Muhammad after a 4-week trial. The FBI is wrapping up its 2-week search of a suburban Detroit horse farm after finding no trace of former Teamsters boss Jimmy Hoffa's remains, a local prosecutor said Tuesday. Oakland County Prosecutor David Gorka told the Associated Press he was informed by Bloomfield Township Police that the search was ending without any remains found at the Hidden Dreams Farm in Milford Township, Michigan. Iraq will investigate allegations that U.S. Marines carried out a massacre of civilians in Haditha in November, the country's prime minister has said. Nouri Maliki told Reuters news agency that there was a limit to the acceptable excuses for civilian casualties. The Pentagon is close to ending its own inquiries into the deaths, initially attributed to a clash with militants. Observers say the incident could deal a more serious blow to U.S. standing than the Abu Ghraib scandal. George Bush first learned of reports that U.S. Marines killed 24 unarmed Iraqi civilians only after reporters began asking questions, the White House said Tuesday. In other Iraq news, car bombs targeting Shiite areas tore through a car dealership in southern Iraq and a bustling outdoor market north of Baghdad Tuesday as attacks nationwide killed 54 people and wounded 120 more in the bloodiest day in recent weeks. Iraqi officials also said a key terror suspect who allegedly confessed to hundreds of beheadings was captured in a raid that also netted documents, cell phones, and computers that contained information on other wanted terrorists and Islamic extremist groups. The Supreme Court today scaled back protections for government workers who blow the whistle on official misconduct, a 5-4 decision in which new Justice Samuel Alito cast the deciding vote. In a victory for the Bush administration, justices said that 20 million public employees do not have free speech protections for what they say as part of their jobs. Critics predicted the impact would be sweeping, from silencing police officers who fear retribution for reporting department corruption to subduing federal employees who want to reveal problems with government hurricane preparedness or terrorist-related security. Supporters said that it will protect governments from lawsuits filed by disgruntled workers pretending to be legitimate whistleblowers. You're listening to News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Hey, this is Michelle Branch, and I'm part of a program called Empower. Mental health problems are real, common, and treatable. To learn more, visit empoweryouth.org. That's the letter M, poweryouth.org.
The European Union acted illegally when it agreed to transfer airline passenger data to the United States as part of U.S. efforts to fight terrorism, the bloc's highest court said on Tuesday. The United States, the Executive European Commission, and European Airlines said the ruling would have no immediate impact on transatlantic air travel and left time to find an agreed solution to the data transfer issue. Under a May 2004 EU-US agreement, European Airlines have been obliged to give U.S. authorities 34 items of information on passengers flying to the United States, including name, address, and all forms of payment and contact telephone numbers. The United States insisted the transfer of personal details was essential to fight terrorism following the September 11 attacks on New York and Washington by suicide plane hijackers. But the European Parliament challenged the deal, contending it had no legal basis and infringed fundamental rights. George Bush on Tuesday named Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson to be the next Treasury Secretary, succeeding Jon Snow. Bush made the announcement at a brief White House ceremony flanked by Paulson and Snow, whose resignation had been widely expected. In his remarks, Bush said the Treasury Secretary would be the leading force on his economic team, as well as the chief spokesman for his economic policies, and he praised Paulson's experience and integrity. Federal authorities are actively investigating dozens of American television stations for broadcasting items produced by the Bush administration and major corporations and then passing them off as normal news. Some of the fake news segments talked of success in the war on Iraq or promoted the company's products. Investigators from the Federal Communications Commission are seeking information about stations across the country after a report produced by a campaign group detailed the extraordinary extent of such items. The report by the nonprofit group Center for Media and Democracy found that over a 10-month period, at least 77 television stations were making use of the faux news broadcasts known as video news releases. Not one told viewers who had produced the items.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, you heard the phone number. Learn it, know it, use it if you feel so inclined. I'm Bob, and I want to go back, if you please, to this whistleblower case for a minute, because I maintain the stance that everything is a labor issue. It's kind of like that sort of that silly little game of 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Everything is a labor issue. Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority in this Garcetti versus Ceballos case. Said government workers, quote, retain the prospect of constitutional protection for their contributions to the civic discourse. On the other hand, he said that they don't have, quote, a right to perform their jobs however they see fit. See? He took a free speech issue, he took a good government issue, and turned it into a labor issue and said, screw the worker. See, this isn't a labor... It isn't, but it is. This thing went up as a straightforward the case of official retribution for whistleblower conduct. Free speech. Well, see, the Supreme Court didn't see it that way. The Supreme Court said, no. This is about the right of the... Of government employees to be controlled. They can't just do their job any old way they want to. But see, if you are a whistleblower, if you see something filthy, dirty, rotten, stinking, and corrupt going on, and you try to tell somebody about it, you tell me, is that free speech? When you know that you're laying everything, your future, your career, you're laying it on the line to do the right thing, and this Supreme Court, this bunch of no good SOBs for the most part who've never worked an honest day's living in their lives, tells you it's not about you having a right to free speech. It's a right about your boss being able to tell you to shut the hell up and go back to your desk. Labor. It's a labor issue. See, in this particular, we live in a country where a vast majority of people surveyed, and the survey's been done a number of times, people are surveyed, and the question is, if you could join a union, and you knew that no one could try to hurt you for joining the union, would you do it? And God, the yes answer is like 70, 80, 90% of the respondents say, you're damn right I would. People want job protection. People want decent wages. People want to be able to stand up to the boss when the boss is doing evil or just wrong and call it without being afraid that something horrible will be done to them. Well, this is a step backward. This is a step backward. But, it's one a number of steps backward that these right-wing Republican freaks have engaged in. The New York City head of the Transport Workers Union wound up going to jail because the courts held that a working person has no right to withhold their labor. Dig it. Go look it up, sort of reverse engineer the dictionary definition. What are you when the courts and the government say you have no right to withhold your labor? What are you? You know the answer. Government workers retain the prospect of constitutional protection for their contributions to the civic discourse, but they do not have a right to perform their jobs however they see fit. Well, see, in the case of Mr. Ceballos, it wasn't a matter of him trying to do his job however he saw fit. This guy was an assistant district attorney. Guy, man, come on. Guy. He was a prosecutor. And, when you're a lawyer, you're an officer of the court, and you swear this oath about how you're not going to try to lie to the court or, do dirty things or cheat or fraud on the court or suborn perjury or, any of that mean, nasty stuff. It's an oath. You swear it. You promise. Really and for true. Stick a needle in my eye. And And the Supreme Court just said that his oath doesn't matter worth a damn. Because as a worker, he's a lawyer, for God's sakes, but as a worker, he needs to go and sit the hell down and shut the hell up. Because he doesn't have a right to do his job as he sees fit. Even though the oath that he swore, you know, when he found out the sheriff's deputy was a damn liar and put his name to a lie on a search warrant affidavit, and he's thinking, you know, I took an oath and they will have my law license if I get caught covering this up. So he comes out with it. And the L.A. District Attorney's Office busts his ass for it. I don't care about your oath. I mean, this is L.A. after all, you know, and, you know, after the whole Mark Furman thing and everything. Rampart Division and all of that crap. You know, we can't be running around talking about how the cops are lying and stuff on warrant applications. And the Supreme Court of the United States can't even find its way to uphold an individual oath sworn to a court by an officer thereof? Holy mackerel. These people are over the edge and around the bend. I mean, real types. It's amazing. Bless his little heart, Justice John Paul Stevens. Public employees are still citizens while they are in office. The notion that there is a categorical difference between speaking as a citizen and speaking in the course of one's employment is quite wrong. Give it a couple more years, Justice Stevens. You'll be using the same kind of language I do. You'll be calling Scalito a freak. Couldn't decide the case. They had to get that right-wing monster on the court so he could tilt the balance in favor of another knife in the heart of the First Amendment. I don't know about you, but I don't feel so good about that. Let's take a break. The number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line.
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
I That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to 4thEstateRadio.com. That's 4thEstateRadio.com.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Another owner in the night, blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche. Another owner in the night.
I got to go actually read those lyrics sometime. Been wondering about them since seventh grade. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for Tuesday evening. And just tickled to death to be with you, however it is that you're joining in. However you care to participate, there are a number of alternatives. I haven't mentioned it this evening, but for one, there are message boards at my website, headonradio.com. They're free, and it's a permanent form of conversation and give and take. Just register. If you have a problem, email me. I'll make it work. And during the show and during any other time, just for conversation and conviviality and friendliness, drop by headonradionetwork.com and join us in the chat room. Of course, all the listen live links and show information are there at headonradionetwork.com as well. All kinds of different fun stuff that we try to make available to make the show more interactive. So jump on by. We're having a blast in the chat room. Or so I'm told. I'm not there right now. I'm afraid something will happen and get me kicked. And I just really want to, you know, stay on the air. You know how that goes. Let's go to the phones. Richard is with us. Hey, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Bob.
How you doing?
Well, I'm fine. It stopped raining here in Northern California. Finally.
That's a blessing.
So my workshop's still full of mud, but it's drying. And actually, I've got three things to discuss. The first one, Agnes mentioned I should bring this up on the air. You know that psychiatric abuse PSA you guys have been running?
Yeah.
You know who's behind it?
Scientologists?
You bet. That's it.
Out of there then.
Yeah.
It's out.
Okay. Now, the subject I want to talk with you is going to be windmills, but let me ask about something else briefly. I actually listened to the program delayed. Like, for instance, I'm still listening to last Tuesday's program a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I can download the shows to my MP3 player and listen to it while I'm doing something else. What I'd really like to do is be able to be out and about around the house and play the audio. But, of course, it only plays in the room where the computer is, and that's the problem. Do you know any way around this?
If I don't, I bet you there are some tech folks who probably do. obviously, you know, if you tapped your computer into speakers outside the house, of course you'd be broadcasting to the neighbors maybe or something like that. But of course, you know, you can also, I mean, through an iPod or something like that, you can download to that because we've got it set up for podcasting, mm-hmm. and walk around with your headphones on.
Okay. What I'm thinking about maybe is putting an FM transmitter onto the computer. So.
You know. Oh wow, that would be kind of cool.
But the
probably the iPod is you know, some portable MP3 player.
I'm doing that. That's still delayed, you know. But to broadcast off the feed would be wonderful. You know, around the house. And if let me just put this out there. If anybody knows of a really cheap FM transmitter that can go onto a computer, that would be nice for everybody to know.
Great.
Okay.
Well, I'm hearing from our friend Ben Birch that you can get a little FM transmitter. We'll look around and see what we can find out.
The ones I've seen are all overpriced. I'm an audio guy, so sometimes I just look at the price.
There is a link at the White Rose site, Richard, mm-hmm. To geeks.com.
Oh, okay.
And Ben is telling me that if you'll go to that, use that link, you can get a little FM transmitter there, he thinks.
Okay. I know I've seen them for sale, but they're usually quite overpriced. And usually
there's some great bargains at Geeks.
Okay. I will check that out. So, you know, you were talking about windmills last week, and you asked for somebody to call up who's not near you in West Virginia. Remember that?
Mm-hmm, I do.
Okay, well, I live near a windmill farm in the Altamont Pass in Northern California, and it's old. That windmill farm's been there for well over 10 years. I've also seen a very large installation near Palm Springs. So these obviously are places where there's a lot of wind. And I have mixed feelings about it, and so I should sort of bring these up. The windmills that I've seen are, I would say, they're built on the cheap. They're just like two blades that whirl around. And birds do get killed by those blades. So there's some, you know, environmental types who are real upset and, you know, about the birds getting killed. And mm-hmm. I interviewed with U.S. Wind Power, must have been 15 years ago. It didn't work out, but I was very impressed by what they were doing. This is just one of the companies that has some windmills out in Altamont Pass, and the story is quite interesting because they were set up by a bunch of doctors who were looking for a tax loss, and the surprise was that they wound up making money and had to change their strategy. In other words, they had to start taking themselves seriously.
Right.
And the technology is it's pretty simple. The control system on these things at the time was just an 8088 computer. So what we're talking about here is the processing chip. And in essence, it was the equivalent of the original IBM PC. So there's one of these at the bottom of each windmill. And you were talking about planting flowers, if I remember right.
Yeah, one of my more brilliant ideas.
Well, actually, I think there's something to that. And in other words, the windmills I've seen, they're different designs, but they're all very industrial looking. They're not attractive, but
kind of sterile.
Yeah, very much so. So I think what needs to be done is to make them look nice. You know, I don't know how to do that, but put some artists to work on this thing. Industrial designers.
Well, exactly. And, you know, Richard, you know, you're talking about an older installation, and in windmill technologies, I'm sure you realize 10 years is forever.
Yeah.
The technology has changed dramatically. I would imagine that the technology for those windmills you're describing is not even remotely the same as for what's being planned for Greenbrier County.
That could catch up, you know. The windmills that I've used to seeing look quite inefficient to my eye, you know. On the other hand, they could be designed that way intentionally because if the wind is strong enough, a windmill with a lot of blades might get blown apart. So I'm quite sure people have thought about this a lot. And of course, if they put shields around them, you know, like fans have, you know, regular fans that we use in the house, electric fans, maybe the efficiency will go down by 2 or 3%, but that's probably okay. It'll keep the birds from getting, you know, killed.
Right, and you know, there's some evidence out there that suggests that cats kill more birds than windmills do.
I believe that, but you know, so. We have a case right now where people are talking about putting windmills off of San Francisco. And, of course, the animal people are real upset about birds getting killed. So this might just make everybody happy. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of exciting opportunities, I think. You know, if we can...
Well, the saddest thing we're dealing with in West Virginia, Richard, is that the people who are opposing the windmills in Greenbrier County... You have to really, really try. Well, most anywhere in West Virginia, if you want to go somewhere, you have to really try to get there. And nothing could be truer than that is in the case of these windmills. Secondly, you know, one of the leading opponents of them is a huge resort operated by the CSX Transportation Company called the Greenbrier. It's world famous.
I'm familiar with the Greenbrier. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is. If you got on the highest peak near the Greenbrier, you couldn't see the windmills.
I believe that. And you, your state has been so trashed by these people. It's heartbreaking, really.
And, you know, there's you know, with the animal people, and, you know, I make a little PETA joke every now and then, but, I'm sensitive, especially after this book that I just got done reading, The Omnivore's Dilemma. I can't tell you how that thing just opened my mind to about food. And, you know, I'm not ready to go throw blood on a model wearing a fur coat or anything, but I can't go buy the meat case in the grocery store the same way anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm sensitive to that, but by the same token, we are, I mean, if the people that I tend to side with are even 10% correct in their prognostications about the fairly immediate American future, hard choices, Richard, are going to have to be made. Am I off base in that?
Not at all. As I mentioned, I find all of the opportunities here very exciting. In other words, we have to be creative about how we create energy. And we also have to be creative about how we use it and, you know, how we save it. So.
I couldn't agree more. And the thing, you know, I'm willing to make a peace with the animal people. Let us move forward because we're in a technological type society where we can't get along without some of this stuff. We can make concessions. We can absolutely promise that we will try to advance the technology till it doesn't happen anymore. But we have to start. You know, Jimmy Carter delivered an address in 1976-77 that said we have to start on it now. And we still haven't started that to this day.
Yep.
But we have got to get sensible about our energy needs.
Well, remember his phrase, the moral equivalent of war.
Yes, exactly.
And if we put a tenth of the energy into this that we put into Iraq, you know, imagine.
We're beyond the moral equivalent, Richard. We're dealing with the actual equivalent of war.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you know, you were talking about the CNO Railroad, now CSX. I've been on that railroad. I have relatives in Charleston, and I used to visit them from New York. So, you know, I thought that the New River Gorge is just beautiful magic.
Breathtaking, isn't it?
It is wonderful, especially at dawn when the steam is rising from the river.
Oh, and it's absolutely amazing. When you drive over the bridge over the gorge, Richard, mm-hmm. and all of that fog is still below you in the early morning.
Wow.
It's like being in an aircraft.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're looking down on clouds. It blew my little son's mind one day, and daughters. I said, yeah, well, those are clouds. You're looking down on clouds. And they went, wow.
Yeah. Well, the talking about railroads, I think railroads can be a great benefit in our transportation energy use. Railroads are very, very efficient. And the problem that I see is because of the lack of regulation, we have wound up with something like 5 or 6 trunk line railroads in this whole country. And there used to be probably over 100 of them. So it's all
absolutely.
What's that?
I said absolutely. We got left in the dust as compared with old Japan or Europe. Rail traffic is, my God, I don't know the factor to apply to it. How much more efficient it is than airline travel?
I'm thinking it is. Because there's so little friction in the steel wheel on the steel rail. It's really mind-boggling. A person can push a boxcar.
Yes.
But what's really scary about all this is the concentration of power in so few hands. So here I am very close to San Francisco, and all up and down the West Coast there are only 2 corporations that own the tracks going east. Or north-south, for that matter. So between...
Yeah, and all of this is an outgrowth, so much is an outgrowth of the attempt to take the economy that we built during the Second World War and turn it into a peacetime measure. You know, we spent a lot of time making nitrates during the war for explosive purposes, and we had all these nitrate factories, tried to turn them around to a peacetime use, and that's how we have the prevalence of nitrate fertilization in our soil. I think you saw the death of the railroads coming out of the Second World War too, because that wasn't largely an air war, and so we created an aircraft infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
That left the railroads behind.
Well, they've bounced back, of course, with container freight, so they're profitable now. The big guys are certainly.
But I'd still like to be able to get on a train here.
Yeah.
And go back home to the hills, or if my dad wants to leave here and come visit us for a while, he doesn't have to get in the car and drive. Get on a train.
You're in Alabama, is that right?
Right now, yeah.
Yeah. As I recall, the railroad that comes through your area is, of course, transportation in West Virginia is difficult. I mean, you've got mountains and valleys, and the C&O Railroad, which is basically it where you are, is a north-south, I believe, north-south railroad. And I used to think it's a railroad that sort of goes from nowhere to nowhere.
Well, its original design was born in the coal industry, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm kind of proud of the fact that my forebears that track you were talking about through the New River Gorge, my forebears laid that track.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great.
The George Washington line was one of the preeminent passenger lines in the country. For ordinary passengers, there was opulence and grace.
Well, they never had the volume of traffic because the through route is really from Norfolk, Virginia, or actually Newport News, to, let's say, Cincinnati. And through links, they go from Washington, D.C., approximately the same place, Ashland, Kentucky, and other points to the west. So if people are going, let's say, from New York to Chicago, they'll take a faster route.
Yeah,
but
well, you know, again, the CSX freight routes were designed. Right there in the New River Valley is a ghost town now, part of the New River Gorge National Recreation Area called Thurmond, West Virginia.
Oh,
Richard,
I knew it. Yeah,
yeah. Thurmond, at one point in time, first of all, the railroads made sure that there are literally no roads in Thurmond except the railroad. And because they wanted to maintain control of access in and out, because at one point in time, more coal moved through Thurmond, West Virginia, than moved through Cincinnati, Wheeling, and Richmond combined.
That's believable.
And as a consequence of that,
all those branch lines going up into the hills, bringing the coal out, they could visualize this.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of, you know, narrow gauge tracks and stuff. And we have an opportunity to reinvigorate our national infrastructure. There's a wonderful website out there called ApolloAlliance.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time I read that, a significant portion of that was dedicated to rehabilitating rail travel in this country and looking toward future rail travel in this country. It has to be a part of a sane energy policy.
So where do we go when we have railroad corporations which are dead opposed to passenger trains? And I'm thinking of the Union Pacific Railroad right now, which basically is all the passenger trains coming into where I live in the East Bay, of east side of San Francisco Bay, come on Union Pacific tracks. They come into California on Union Pacific tracks from the east and from the north. And in particular, we got the train from Los Angeles to New Orleans in Florida. Its name of the train is the Sunset Limited, and the Union Pacific routinely stabs that train, you know, sidetracks it for freights, and it'll arrive in New Orleans like 10 hours late.
And just because it's been pissed by the UP.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Amtrak.
Well, this is one of those places where government regulation comes into play. There's a reason, and I grew up in a time, we talked about airlines. I grew up in a time, Richard, when there was Pan Am and there was Eastern and there was Piedmont and all of this. But we got deregulated and there it went. Richard, we're out of time. I'm getting the music, and that means I got to go. So good to hear from you. I hope we will again.
Okay, you will. Take care.
Take care. Bye now. Quick break. Labor news. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Labor Report from the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch. Democratic Party leader Howard Dean canceled his keynote address at the cap-and-gown ceremony for graduates of UC Berkeley's Bolt Hall School of Law because he doesn't want to cross union picket lines, university officials said Friday. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local 3299, embroiled in a labor dispute with the university, says it will picket any UC Berkeley commencement ceremony at which a public official or prominent politician is scheduled to speak. Several other scheduled graduation speakers, including State Senator Liz Figueroa, Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez, Assemblywoman Carol Liu, Kenyatta Flintridge, and Representative Dennis Kucinich, all Democrats, have agreed to honor picket lines at commencement ceremonies. The labor movement, founded on the principle of worker solidarity, is seriously divided over the guest worker program proposed as part of an immigration reform legislation. Guest worker programs allow foreigners to enter the United States temporarily to take select jobs. The idea is favored by the Service Employees International Union and other unions whose ranks include lots of immigrants. Support for the idea has become a part of the drive to make the union movement relevant to new groups of workers. But the idea is opposed by the AFL-CIO, the labor's largest confederation, and other unions that say such programs cast workers into second-class status and depress wages. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney said, quote, Guest worker programs are a bad idea and harm all workers. Guest worker programs encourage employers to turn good jobs into temporary jobs at reduced wages and diminished working conditions and contribute to the growing class of workers laboring in poverty, end quote. The Service Employees International Union and other labor groups with a large proportion of immigrant members say a guest worker program would provide protections and legal status for foreigners who work in the United States. Workers of a garment factory in Dhaka, Bangladesh, yesterday confined their top executives inside the factory for hours demanding wage hike and payment of arrears. Over 1,500 workers of the foreign-owned garment factory Ownerway began work abstention in the afternoon and confined the top executives. A worker of the factory told Newsmen that the authorities had recently increased the wages of 300 out of 1,600 workers of the unit. The workers became agitated yesterday following a declaration from the owners that the wages of the remaining 1,300 workers would not be increased. At one stage, the aggrieved workers stopped working and closed the doors and windows of the factory, keeping the top executives confined. The workers set free the executives after getting an assurance from the owners that they would resolve the problem through discussion today, said a police official when contacted over a cell phone from Dhaka. And that's the labor report from the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch.
Then we're moving toward the tail end of tonight's program. It's about about a quarter till or thereabouts, 16 minutes till, but plenty of time to get another call in. Our good friend Bob is back with us from North Dakota. Hey Bob, welcome back.
hello Bob, how are you?
I'm doing good. You
been a couple days, but hey, I was keyed on to an article today in the Independent. That's kind of in the UK, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of them newspapers that that looks for honesty and truth.
Yeah, the occasional fact or so, yeah.
Yeah, the occasional fact or so. This one is by a very well-known writer, and some call him the America's leading thinker. His name is Noam Chomsky. You ever heard of him?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And his article is called Why It's Over for America.
Wow.
And it says, and these are three of these. It says, an inability to protect its citizens, the belief that it is above the law, and the third thing, this is the most important thing, a lack of democracy. Three defining characteristics of a failed state, Bob.
Yeah.
Failed state. No, he's not saying it's failing. He's saying it is a failed state.
No, yeah, right. I mean, that's why I refer to this once great nation, Bob.
Yeah,
I've gotten emails giving me hell for, how dare you say this nation ain't great?
Well, let them talk to Noam. I mean, all I got to do is pull this article up because it's dated. Bob, let me ask a question because I'm kind of a little lax on time and I'm not quite sure what date today is. Is today the 30th of May, 2006?
It would be.
Ah. And that's exactly when this article came out, 30 May 2006, at 14:31 hours. Okay, that's like 3:31 in the afternoon. To people that want to look for what the difference between 14:31 and you know, 1431 to us military boys is like 2:31, around 3 o'clock. 1500 is 3 o'clock, but 1431 is 2:30 this afternoon. This article hit the Independent out of Great Britain or the UK, and I've read it.
Well, that's the thing. But you got to go to the, you know, you can't would the New York Times ever dare publish something like that by Noam Chomsky? The L.A. Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Atlanta Journal Constitution, Boston Globe. Hell no!
Are you talking right wing press, or are you talking the right? The people that speak power and tell the truth.
Right, and see, that's, I mean, it extends beyond that, Bob, because doggone it, we desperately need politicians who can talk about what is desperately wrong in this country. But you can't. You can't if you're running for office and you actually want to get elected, you can't get up and you can't say that this country is in trouble, that this country is in a moral morass. You can say that if you're a Republican, and you can say that if that's code for we don't have the Ten Commandments in enough public buildings. But you can't say that and really mean it. You can't say that and intend to call upon the American people for a deep, searching, abiding examination of our national life. You can't do that.
I know, and that's sad because, you know,
and it will it is sad, Bob, because it does create that failed state that Noam Chomsky is referring to, the inability to address those vital
failed
concerns. Yeah,
we have failed. We have failed as citizens. We have failed as individuals. Okay, we put ourselves above everyone else, above our neighbor, above our responsibility. We have put ourselves above what we should really put ourselves at, is that I am a member of this society, and I owe some form of allegiance to, not myself, but to my fellow citizens. And in doing that, my most precious thing is my constitutionally guaranteed right to a freedom of speech, and I can speak what I understand to be the truth. I don't have to absolutely know the truth, because truth is, like you say, it's kind of like, who knows what's truth and what's factual. But if I understand something to be above what I really understand, what I really know, and I see it as something, okay, a goal or a purpose or a reason to resist fascism or neo-fascism or neo-Christian fascism or whatever you want to call it. You can give all kinds of names to things, Bob. I've been called lots of names. I've been called a, I won't say it because you'd probably have to kick me off the air. But I've been called a lot of names, and I don't know if any of them fit. I really don't know if I really fit in this country anymore, because, you see, I used to believe. I used to be, like you said, now the scales have dropped off your eyes, and and you see something that others refuse to see, and it's true. And the sadness is sometimes when you try to reveal what you understand to someone else, the scales are still on their eyes. They will not look past their own, what is it?
Well, there are people, Bob, who have stared into the abyss, and the abyss stared back, and they survived. And there is another class of people, or not class, but a category or subset, you know, whatever the hell. There's a group of people in this country who will not stare, who won't get within 100 miles of the abyss. They want to live in this world where America is the land of the free and the home of the brave, and we never waged war on the indigenous peoples, and we didn't start the war with Mexico.
I know. Talk about, Bob. It's Tinkerbell.
The Tinkerbell people,
yeah,
exactly.
Tinkerbell. Oh, Tinkerbell. see, the one where the one I loved with Jimmy Stewart, or was it Jimmy Stewart? He's standing there and at the Christmas tree, and a bell rings.
Oh yeah. Yeah, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of Republicans in this country who are sitting there hanging on for dear life to their Zuzu pedals.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's it. See, I'm sorry. I had to hack up another phlegm ball or fur ball, whatever. It's just that simple. Either you just accept the fact that we have made. The last 75 to 80 years has been one giant step into hell for this country. You know, if you go
back. I don't know when we became a failed state, Bob.
Well, it started back at that point where we entered into a contract against democracy. And I'm not sure exactly when that took place, but we entered this contract into self-serving me-first thing. And I don't know exactly when that took place because I don't know if it was during the war between the states or
the war of northern aggression?
The war of northern aggression. Yeah, you put it so good the other day. Northern aggression? Who fucking
That one up. That was strictly my sweet southern elementary grade school teacher.
Okay. Yeah. But who fired shot at Fort Sumter, you know?
We did.
Yeah, okay. And it's northern aggression.
If you want to take the short view, the America that I was taught to believe in probably took its last gasp and took the final shank between the ribs when Ronald Reagan took the oath of office. Bob.
Ah, the great liar. No, the communicator.
the great prevaricator.
Yeah, prevaricator.
That's when the corporate buddies all got together and yelled charge and pulled their damn sabers out and went after working people with their teeth bared. That's really when the hardcore corporatists began coming out of the closet and going, oh, we can get away with all kinds of crap.
Everybody needs. I mean, I've just read you the Noam Chomsky as the author. And the date is 30 May. It's in the Independent out of the UK. And everybody needs to read this article. And if possible, and if they can afford it, get the book, okay? And then read the book and, you know, listen to an individual that leading scholars, I'm not talking about dumb, fat, old, used up, war horses like myself or free thinking individuals consider to be them, you know, themselves to be some point of reference. This gentleman has spent his entire career being one of America's most outspoken and most independently thinking individuals. And he is considered by the world to be the leading thinker of this country, not